First Name Sports starts now.
We're kind of on a first name basis around here.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Okay, let's get started.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Greg Frank.
What's going on, America? It's Monday afternoon on the Sports Map Radio Network. My name is Greg Frank. John Bellmer, our producer. Happy May to all as we enter the fifth month on the calendar year. Feels like it's flying by. Mother's Day right around the corner. I'm sure moms and dads with children graduating in the not-too-distant future are getting ready for their grad parties. Bellmer, are those big down here? Grad parties?
Yeah, I would say so.
Kind of, you know, everywhere, right? Yeah, that's one thing that I felt like.
Kind of a universal life big moment.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I would like to think that it's celebrated everywhere. So it's a busier time of year for sure with, as I said, Mother's Day, graduation's coming, Memorial Day weekend. Always, do you guys go to Galveston? Is that a thing? Beaches in Galveston? That for us, it was always the Jersey Shore to start the summer.
Well, Galveston's not as popular because it's kind of ugly and dreary. Yeah. There are some theme parks or water parks down there that kids like to frequent.
May is kind of the beginning of the boat season, probably. Like, people start getting out on the water more.
Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you're going to be doing a lot of that
this summer. Hopefully my wake surfing improves. You know, with my buddy that had me out on the lake last year, by the end of the summer, I could finally stand up on the board. I wasn't just saying, hey, yeah, you can start, and then torpedoing right into the water right
away.
Baby
steps.
Exactly. So, anyway, baby stepping their way right out of the Stanley Cup playoffs last night were the Boston Bruins. And I didn't think we'd be talking hockey out of the gate today, but an absolute historic meltdown by the Boston Bruins as they lose 4-3 in overtime in Game 7 to the Florida Panthers. And their season is over. And if you're not familiar with hockey, what happened last night at TD Garden is the equivalent of the Golden State Warriors when they were 73-9. And granted, they did lose in the NBA Finals to Cleveland that year. But that 73-9 2015-2016 Warriors season? Gosh, I remember the last night of the regular season, the Warriors were going for the record because they had 72 wins and the Bulls had a 72-win season. They were going for the record, and it was the same night that Kobe played his last game. And that was a pretty cool last night of the NBA season. But it's like that team, that Golden State team, losing in the first round. That's what happened last night in TD Garden in Boston. The Bruins lost 7 games combined between regulation and overtime at home. In the regular season. In this series, they lost 3 games at home. They led 3-1 in this series. And I was saying about a week ago, after Boston had taken a 3-1 series lead, that it sure felt like the air was out of the balloon for Florida after Florida started the series pretty well with a split in Boston, and even the game that the Panthers lost, game one, they played pretty well in. And then they go back home, and Boston really asserts its dominance and takes the commanding 3-1 series lead, and you're thinking it's over. Goalie gaff behind the net in overtime, turns the puck over right to Matthew Tkachuk for Florida, and the Panthers get at least live to see another day, and they go back home. And then where I really thought this series changed, not that I necessarily went into last night thinking that Florida would win, but I really felt there was a seismic change on Friday night when the Panthers won 7-5 in game 6 to force a 7th game. The Bruins gave up 7 goals. And when a team like that is taken out of its element to that degree, well, then if you're Florida, you're saying, hey, we can score on these guys. We've won twice in their building already. And sure enough, last night, Florida jumps out to a 2-0 lead. And to the Bruins' credit, they come back storming out with a few in the third period to take a 3-2 lead. David Pastrnak puts him ahead. And in the final minute of regulation, I talk about how these are my favorite moments of hockey games, when the team down by one pulls the goaltender for the extra attacker, and they go 6-on-5 and tie the game. And Florida did that. Montour gets a goal for Florida, sends it to overtime, and Carter Verhaeghe is your hero for the Florida Panthers with the overtime winner a little over halfway past the, halfway past elapsed time in the first overtime. And by the way, it's funny how South Florida, with the Heat and now the Panthers, both pulling off these mega upsets over the Bucks and Bruins. We talked last week about Giannis Antetokounmpo. Well, it's not a failure. And, you know, getting really mad about the fact that he was asked if the Bucks season was a failure. Here's what the Boston Bruins announcer, Jack Edwards, how he called the winning goal by Carter Verhaeghe last night.
On him. Verhaeghe wins the series for Florida. And this joyride ends in a Hindenburg-like ending. The Bruins are the second record-setting team in a row to drop the series in the first round.
Okay, so I called my dad about this because my dad is a history buff and he watches sports when I have him on. He likes baseball and he'll casually keep up with the other teams. And I said, Dad, you'd be proud of me, because he always likes to trivia or quiz me on, well, do you know what happened on this day 85 years ago? And I'd never know. And then he'll be, how could you not know that? And then I'll be like, okay, Dad, well, do you know, who the closest player to, to come to Joe DiMaggio's 56-game hitting streak was? And then when he doesn't know, I'll say, well, how could you not know that? So that's always how I spit it back, is with something sports-related to get him. But the Hindenburg disaster, if you didn't know, for a little history lesson, was a airship commercial passenger accident in New Jersey, a German airship designed and built by the Zeppelin company and operated by the German Zeppelin airline company, that in 1937 killed 35 people. So that's how they're calling it locally in Boston. That's how they're comparing last night. That's what they're comparing it to. A tragedy that saw 35 people die. So I've always said that, and I admit I am biased. I grew up in the Northeast. But these markets, sports are just a huge part of their culture. And when you hear something like that, in contrast with what happened last week with Giannis, it certainly puts it into perspective. I bet you there are a lot of Bruins fans that will not make that analogy. But you better believe everybody in Boston is throwing the pitchforks towards the Bees today, because it absolutely was a failure of a season. It might suck that this is how you're judged, but after 5-6 months of setting records, to lose in the first round of a playoff series, not just a one-game single elimination, you were up 3-1. You lost three games at home. There is no other way to look at this season than to remember it by the choke job that it ended with. And let's remember that there are some veterans here, like Patrice Bergeron, like David Krejci, whose careers may have ended last night. Both of those guys are very much year-to-year with where they are in their late 30s. So I don't know that they want it to end like that. But if they're able to move on. And I believe both of those guys were on the Bruins team in 2011 that won the Stanley Cup. If they're able to say, hey, I got my cup, I don't know that I want to do another season. That's how their careers ended. And then you have younger players like Pastrnak, like Charlie McAvoy, who, yeah, Boston went to the Stanley Cup final and lost in seven games to St. Louis in 2019. But Pastrnak and McAvoy, if they don't win a cup, could easily look back on this team and say, this was the best team I ever played on. And you lost in seven games, up 3-1 in the first round to the final playoff qualifier in the Eastern Conference, the Florida Panthers, who I think will get boat raced by the Toronto Maple Leafs in the next round. We'll get to that a little bit later on. But the Hindenburg disaster is the analogy that Bruins announcer Jack Edwards used last night. We played it to characterize the collapse that was the Boston Bruins' first round playoff exit. Again, if you're not familiar with hockey, this was the 73-9 Golden State Warriors NBA team from 7 years ago. This was them losing in the first round. Crazy. Up 3-1, nonetheless. We'll take a timeout, and we'll come back on the other side, and we will go to the hardwood, where in TD Garden, they're hoping for better things up in Boston as the Celtics host the Sixers in Game 1 tonight. Joel Embiid, what is the latest with the likely MVP? Keith Pompey from the Philadelphia Inquirer joins next. First Name Sports, Sportsnet Radio.
You're back with First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Live from the Sports Map Radio studios, here's Greg Frank.
Well, unfortunately, injuries have become quite the theme in the NBA playoffs in 2023, and no bigger injury that we're tracking right now than the LCL sprain for Joel Embiid, and we're going to go out to the Progressive guest line to get the latest from Boston as he's in Beantown covering the Sixers for the Philadelphia Inquirer. His name is Keith Pompey, at Pompey on Sixers on Twitter. Keith, good to talk to you again. How you doing?
Hey, man, great talking to you. How you been?
Absolutely, doing pretty well. So just give us the latest. What's the vibe up there in Boston, and what is the pulse right now with Joel Embiid and the LCL?
You know, it's funny because there's the LCL has become bigger than the game one. Like, you know, is Joel going to play? Is Joel going to play? Like, you know, so it's really, that is the vibe. I mean, you know, and it's weird because you'll see Joel walk on the court or walk in the gym with some flip flops on and then all slippers. And then all of a sudden he'll put on his sneaks and he'll do some light shooting, and everyone has their camera out and everyone's trying to figure out what's going on. So that's the story. I mean, the thing is, you know, he doesn't have a knee brace on. You think if he's going to play, he'll be working out with a knee brace, you know, just trying to get adjusted to it. But he's really not moving, doing anything besides just taking set shots. He's not doing anything laterally. So, you know, I don't know. Maybe they may try to pull a Willis Reed and play him, but no, I think this could be, and I hope that I'm not wrong, but I think it could be just a lot of making people wonder what he's going to do when they know he's not going to play.
Yeah, I mean, you're around the team on a regular basis. Are the Sixers one to kind of play these gamesmanship games? I mean, they are the underdog here, and I always feel like if you're an underdog, you do anything you can to try and screw with the favorite. Like, could there be some of that going on here?
It could be, and they do that. I'm not going to say they do it a lot, but, you know, Doc Rivers is one of these guys that he really likes to keep stuff close to the vest. It's like, hey, Doc, who's starting tonight? Oh, you'll find out. You know, one of those types. And that is always, he's a game time decision. But then when you talk to the guys, like, oh, man, I'm playing. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I think that's one of those. And then, but also, the one thing is so it is gamesmanship, but it's also – Joel Embiid typically decides when he wants to play. Like, seriously, like, the doctor may clear him. Joel's like, let me test it out again. And if he wants to play, even if they say, I don't think is wise, he'll play. And if they clear him and he doesn't think it's wise, he won't play. So, you know, Joel Embiid, again, I mean, he doesn't do anything reckless with it, but I'm just saying, like, if he really wants to play, he'll go out there and give one for the team.
You know, it's kind of a simplistic way of looking at it, but if Sixers fans wanted to be optimistic, could they at least read into the fact that he made the trip to Boston as opposed to them just leaving him in Philly and saying, hey, maybe we can get you for game three?
Yes and no, but it's also part of that gamesmanship, too.
Yeah.
Now, again, you know, you're going to throw that gamesman stuff out the window after game one, right? I mean, and plus how much I'm pretty sure that they've been playing for him with him and without him. But I just think that that's more or less the fans get excited about it, but that's more or less like, you know, hey, we're going to have Joel with us to see what's going on and this and that. But, you know, I don't know. Like, again, he could pull a Willis Reed and he's been known to do that. But, you know, you would think that he would be out there with the brace on and he would be doing some cutting, some other things, some running on it. But all I see is set shots.
Right. Sure. All right, let's get to some of the non-Embiid Sixers. And when it comes to the backcourt, I think clearly even if Joel Embiid gives it a go, the Sixers are going to need James Harden and Tyrese Maxey to be at their best. And you just never know with James Harden. It's such a wide range of outcomes in terms of what you're getting on a game-to-game basis in the postseason. And Tyrese Maxey, while he looked good against the Nets, I know his numbers against the Celtics haven't been as impressive. So what should we expect from the Sixers' backcourt?
You know what? That's the biggest question mark right now, because when you look at Tyrese Maxey, you know, over his career, he's averaged, what, 8.2 points against the Boston Celtics. I mean, he's really struggled. And then you look at James, and James, you know, James has kind of like, I mean, he's shooting 9 for 34 from 2-point shots in the first round of the playoffs. His last six games, he struggled to shoot the ball. So, you know, right now you look at it and you say, well, we want him to be closer to the Houston Rockets, James, but I don't know if he can do that. So with both of them, it's huge question marks, because one guy, you know, traditionally struggles against this team, and another guy, he's battling the Achilles, and Father Time is undefeated. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be tough for that backcourt, I believe so, tonight.
Okay, another thing on James. Watching him enough, obviously he is, you mentioned it, they would love for him to be Houston Rockets James Harden, but he's a little bit more of a facilitator now. He certainly, while you mentioned his shooting woes, he certainly facilitated the ball, I think, pretty well against Brooklyn. Is that kind of player, if they get enough of that, good enough for the Sixers to have a chance?
If Tyrese Maxey goes bananas, it is. Right? I think. But Tyrese Maxey has to go bananas. And so does Tobias Harris. But also, I don't think, you know, the thing about James is, now if James is doing that and he's becoming more of a facilitator, and then what happens is they're going to leave him open, like they're going to try to deny drives and let him open to hit threes. Now, if he can hit a couple threes in fourth quarters, or like one or two to keep them honest, then I think that is good enough. But the one problem with this team is, and as good as James has been, like when you look at it, Joel Embiid has carried this team whenever they played the Boston Celtics. And he carried them, but they always fumbled the ball at the goal line.
Yeah.
Like they couldn't get it through. They couldn't get it done. So, you know, he's averaged for his career 28 points, 36 points this year against the Celtics, and they're 1-3.
Right.
You know, so, you know, I mean, James is going to have to do some superhuman things in order for him to win. But I don't think being old James Harden is going to do it, just because they need to move the ball. But what I think he needs to do as old James Harden is be able to stick some threes and get timely shots. But he can't be as ball dominant as he was in Houston.
All right, Keith. So as we keep working our way down the rotation for the Sixers, I think one thing that I did see that was pretty encouraging in Game 4 against Brooklyn was the fact that the role players for Philly really stepped up. Paul Reed had a double-double. Tobias Harris made a lot of shots. De'Anthony Melton was an excellent acquisition, I thought, by Daryl Morey. He knocked down some shots. And that's where I really begin to look at this and say, All right. If the Sixers can match Boston's depth, because that has always been an excellent advantage for Boston against a lot of teams, maybe they have a chance. Do you think that the role players for the Sixers can show up on a consistent enough basis?
You know what? I don't think so. I think this might be a tough matchup for them, just because it's like when you look at the Sixers' role players, you ask yourself, how many of these guys would start on other teams, right? And then when you look at the Boston's bench, you say to yourself, okay, they probably got three guys who would go elsewhere and start, right? You know, sure. I don't think they're deep enough when it comes down to playing Boston, especially if Joel doesn't play, because then that means the rotations that they have and everything else has to be adjusted. And then they're going to bring somebody else in probably who probably doesn't deserve to play. So I mean, again, they look good against Brooklyn. I just think that Boston's a different animal.
Well, the way you've been talking, it seems like you're thinking Boston in five, maybe six max.
Yeah, I think I think it could go six. I mean, you know, you never know what happens in a game one with the uncertainties. But I was always thinking like the two games that the Sixers would win would possibly be game three when they came back to Philly. You know, they're going to ride the excitement from the crowd, role play, and to play better at home. And then I felt like Boston will win game four. And then the Sixers will get game five because Boston, for whatever reason, would be like, hey, we're going back home. We're about to knock them out. It's a closeout game. And they would fall asleep on the wheel, so to speak. So I felt like the Sixers would win game three and game five.
Okay. Well, we'll see if Boston, if it goes the way you're saying, then, you know, Boston wouldn't have learned anything from that game five against Atlanta. But nonetheless, I certainly think I agree with you. I think Boston's just superior, and it just they got to get out early, right, Keith? Like, they got to get a split because then it just gets mental for the Sixers, I feel like.
Yeah, exactly. They're going to have to.
All right, yeah. There he is, Keith Pompey, at Pompey on Sixers on Twitter. Keith, really appreciate your time and enjoy the series. Looking forward to reading your coverage.
Hey, man, thanks for having me on the show.
Absolutely. We'll take a timeout and we'll come back and we will stay in the association. An ode to Steph Curry. He just keeps doing it as Golden State is off to the conference semifinals out west. It'll be another California opponent for the Warriors after eliminating the Kings. It's the Lakers up next as Steph has 50 yesterday in California's capital city. We'll talk about it on the other side.
You're back with First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Live from the Sports Map Radio studios, here's Greg Frank.
All right, let's hit the hardwood a little bit more, actually, after we just previewed Sixers and Celtics. Beginning tonight at TD Garden with Keith Pompey of the Philadelphia Inquirer. We'll head out west where the Sacramento Kings, fun team, fun story, but they were no match in the second half yesterday for the Golden State Warriors as Golden State, after trailing by two at halftime, storms out. I don't know what it is with these Warriors third quarters. It happened last year in the playoffs too, where I don't know if it's halftime adjustments by Steve Kerr or you know, just getting your starters back out there and everybody kind of rested and ready to just drain a bunch of threes. But they outscore the Kings by 12 in the third quarter to take a 10-point lead into the fourth, and then outscore them by 10 more in the fourth to win going away 120-100 and advance to the second round where they will now await the Los Angeles Lakers. And they will host game one of that series at the Chase Center tomorrow night in San Francisco. And we'll certainly get more into the rest of the NBA landscape. And I do have some thoughts on some of the other Warriors who aren't Steph Curry as well, and this Western Conference matchup with the Lakers. But we have to start by just singing Steph's praises as he goes for 50 yesterday, hit seven threes, 20 for 38 shooting. And I tell you, the more that they play without Kevin Durant, not that I ever didn't think that Steph was an all-time shooter and an all-time player for that matter, but this was a big talking point in last season, last year's playoffs when the Warriors won a title and, you know, Steph got his second ring without Durant. And then you see what he does yesterday on the road in a game seven. And it really does make me appreciate the level at which he still plays at. And it kind of puts it into perspective how historic it can be when you hear Steve Kerr. Here was what he said yesterday about his playing days with, of course, Michael Jordan and the ability that Steph has to just take games over.
He doesn't surprise me. We all take him for granted because he's brilliant night after night, and we've been watching this for 10 years. And we just, you know, you just have to remind yourself every once in a while, big picture, this is one of the great players in the history of the game. But that's how I felt, you know, back when in my playing days, you know, with Michael Jordan, you just, you'd see it night after night, so you just took it for granted. So that's how it is with Steph. You just, it's over and over and over again. And the resilience and the work that goes into that and the focus, it's incredible to watch.
You know, and listen, say what we want about Steve Kerr. I mean, I'm not the biggest fan. I think he's a little bit of a mope sometimes on the sidelines. But he has that perspective of having played with Michael Jordan all those years in Chicago. And what he's saying there, that's not a slight on Michael Jordan. What is important to take from that is that this is all-time stuff from Steph. And you're hearing it from a guy that coaches him and played with Michael Jordan. So, like, there's no better point of view there that can relate to both guys than Steve Kerr. And it's really impressive that, I mean, maybe carrying the Warriors is a little bit strong, but I'm starting to get more of those vibes now. Because let's not forget that last year Golden State was the 3 seed in the Western Conference, okay? And this year, Golden State was 6th in the Western Conference. So it's not as if the Warriors are lapping the field in the West anymore. And we're at least going into these series thinking that the opponent for the Warriors has a little bit more of a chance than we were thinking 3-4 years ago, certainly during the Durant days. And I think some of that, by the way, I've never really been much of a Klay Thompson guy. I think that he's a little bit overrated, and gosh, he was terrible in the first half yesterday. Like, you make him create his own shot, you make him defend really well. Like, I just don't think he's as well-versed of a player. And I think, honestly, to say the Splash Brothers is kind of a little disrespectful to Steph, because I don't think that Klay is on Steph's level. I mean, he can get hot and heat up and score a bit, but you look at how, like, I just feel like we don't see Curry have those cold patches that Thompson had in the first half yesterday. And Andrew Wiggins was out for a good portion of the rest of the season. And, you know, he came back. But it really just feels like now more than ever, the Warriors are the Steph show. And how can you not at least be entertained by it? I always felt like, and again, I'm not a big dynasty guy. I'm not a big fan of teams that just murder everyone. But I always felt like there were some egos and some cockiness with the word. By the way, that's Klay. I do not like Klay Thompson from an attitude standpoint either. Draymond obviously is the kind of guy, take it or leave it, love him or hate him, one of those guys. I just feel like Steph just goes out there and dominates on the basketball court. He doesn't feel like a scumbag or, you know, a low life, you know, or somebody that's trying to get in your head with his mouth. He's just going to kill you on the court. And it's impressive that, and I think that's the thing about his game and why I think it'll age pretty well as his career, you know, reaches closer to its conclusion, is because, and that's why also what's so impressive about LeBron is he's a physical specimen. And so you think about the hits that he's taken sometimes going to the basket and the wear and tear on his body and being able to stay healthy. Well, Steph, we don't necessarily associate that kind of style with as much because it's a lot of shot creation. It's a lot of three-point shooting, which you would think will not wear on him as much and allow him to keep doing this. So it's a riveting matchup here. I mean, Adam Silver has got to be lucked, you know, very happy. I think he lucked out here because we talked about it was a topic in the regular season in the NBA where you're like, are we seeing a bit of a changing of the guard in the Western Conference? Because, yeah, Denver has been together for a little bit, and they're the number one seed, but you have Memphis as the two seed, and you have Sacramento as the three seed, a couple of smaller markets that are relatively new in Memphis's case and brand new in Sacramento's case to the big stage in the NBA. And I don't know that it would have been as great for television if we got Memphis and Sacramento, or at least I do know that it wouldn't have been. But instead, we get Golden State and the Lakers. So certainly should be a fun series to watch. I want to tell you all about our friends at Chicken Dinner Casino. Winner, winner, chicken dinner. They hear that a lot at chickendinnercasino.com because they have so many winners. That's because they have so many ways to win, including slots, blackjack, poker, and more. Of course, you can step into the sports book and bet on any sport. And now is the perfect time to play with the NBA playoffs going on, Major League Baseball in full force, and the PGA's biggest tournaments, including the PGA Championship, coming up. And right now, listeners of Sports Map Radio and our show get a special welcome offer. Go to chickendinnercasino.com/sports and get a 50% first-time welcome bonus up to $1,000. That's right, a 50% welcome bonus up to $1,000 when you go to chickendinnercasino.com/sports. So what are you waiting for? Become a winner winner today at Chicken Dinner Casino today. And remember to add the backslash sports for your special welcome offer. Again, those are our friends at Chicken Dinner Casino. And, you know, again, it's a great time of year to bet on sports and, you know, hit the tables as well. So wanted to give a shout out to them. We will take a timeout and coming back on the other side, we're going to chat with a guy we've talked to before, and he's always a lively football guest. Ross Tucker will join, caught up with him to talk and recap the NFL draft as we did have night two and day three transpire on Friday and Saturday. So certainly Philadelphia Eagles seem to have emerged as a big winner from the weekend. We talked a little bit about it on Friday. I liked the Texans being aggressive and with what they did in the first round. And certainly looks like the Carolina Panthers, after the full offseason that they've had, might be primed to make a big step in the NFC South. All of that coming with Ross Tucker. That's next on First Name Sports, Sports Map Radio.
You're back with First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Live from the Sports Map Radio studios, here's Greg Frank.
The 2023 NFL Draft is now in the rearview mirror, but that doesn't mean we can't recap it all to talk about which teams did well and which teams left us scratching our heads from the weekend that was in Kansas City. To talk about it now, we bring on the football jack of all trades, Ross Tucker. He is at Ross Tucker NFL on all social media platforms, has his own podcast at Ross Tucker Pod, and he's kind enough to join us right now on the Progressive Guest Line. Ross, good to have you aboard. How you doing?
I'm doing awesome. Thank you for having me again.
Always a pleasure to chat football with you, and it's also a pleasure to chat about my front page story. And I know that that's a big initiative of yours, and it's something that you guys have been working hard on for a while. Valentine's Day, Mother's Day, different things like that, it really comes in handy. And I know that Mother's Day is right around the corner, so it's a great gift, isn't it? Why don't you tell us about it?
Well, yeah, no, I mean, there's a lot of draft stuff to get into, but listen, your number one draft pick is your mom.
Damn right.
Or your or your wife. So make sure you go to myfrontpagestory.com. My buddy started the company. You literally talk to one of their writers for like 10 minutes while you're driving home from work or driving to work or whatever. They write this unbelievable story. I mean, it looks like it's on the cover of the newspaper. It's pictures of her and you or the kids or whatever. And then when you give it to her and she's opening it, she'll be able to say, like, I want to do something special for you. So I had a story written about you. Just sounds like the coolest gift ever. And then, like, we gave one to my mom last year, and my sister had a quote that said, I just never thank her enough for making me the woman I am. My mom started bawling. Like, my mom was crying. It was awesome. To the point where she literally has it hanging up in her house. Point being, it's number one draft choice for Mother's Day gifts. MyFrontPageStory.com. It's MyFrontPageStory.com.
Ross, I see that 610 area code. I'm a South Jersey guy, so you know where we're starting. Let's talk about those Philadelphia Eagles, who I believe are still called the Philadelphia Eagles, even despite the infusion of Georgia Bulldogs over the weekend. How about Howie Roseman?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it seems like the draft went extremely well for them. You know, they got arguably the best player in the draft with the number 9 pick. That said, 9 teams literally passed on him, right? Because even the Bears traded down from 9 to 10. They could have had him. There's a chance that he's a bust, right? But because of the off-the-field stuff, I think the Eagles feel like there's a higher percentage chance that he'll work out for them than pretty much any team because of the leadership they have there, Fletcher Cox as a mentor, and then him having 4 other teammates from Georgia over the last couple years there with him. Nolan Smith at 30 is a great scheme fit in Philadelphia. I think some people thought he was too small for an edge guy for some of the other teams that passed on him, but he's just right for what the Eagles like to do. So that's a great pick. Sidney Brown, the safety, might start at safety. I think he'll become a fan favorite. He's like a kamikaze out there, man. It's like watching Polamalu. I'm not saying he's that good. I'm just saying that's the style of play. And then really the thing I think is cool is on Saturday, right, the last day of the draft, you can make a really strong argument that the Eagles got the 2 best players because they got Kelee Ringo, who they probably would have taken at 65 or 66, and then they traded for DeAndre Swift.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't really think – that Miles Sanders is better than DeAndre. I think they're pretty similar players. They're both pretty explosive in the open field, but DeAndre is better in the passing game. He's making 1.77. Miles Sanders signed a long-term big contract for $6.5 million a year. The 4 running backs the Eagles have are less than what Miles Sanders is making this year from the Carolina Panthers.
Well, you mentioned Miles Sanders and the Carolina Panthers. Let's go there next. Bryce Young, first overall pick. Frank Reich, obviously a bit of a quarterback guru, has worked with a bunch of them. So how do you see the match with Bryce Young and Frank Reich and with a lot of the weapons they've added? They added Adam Thielen as well. They've been aggressive in adding some talent to that offense with a defense in Carolina that was already pretty good last year. What do you think the timeline's like for Bryce Young, Frank Reich, and the Carolina Panthers?
You know, I think they have a great chance to win that division. Their defense was already good last year. They started to really run the ball well in the second half of the year last year with that O-line. They have Hayden Hurst now at tight end, which they needed, Thielen. And if Bryce Young is as advertised, and I kind of think he will be, I think they're going to be right there in the mix to be able to win that division. You know, I always say this all the time. I follow recruiting very closely, and you know how good you have to be 5'10", a buck 70, and get a full ride to Alabama as a quarterback?
That's a good point. I mean,
and then his first year as a starter, he wins the Heisman. I might have been even more impressed, though, this past year because they didn't really have great people around him. It's not like Alabama's O-line was loaded and they were all getting drafted. It's not like Alabama had all these stud receivers. And yet we see Bryce Young still have a fantastic year. I've never really seen the guy have a bad game. I think he, because of him being a savant in terms of spatial recognition, buying time, I actually think he's going to be one of those rookie quarterbacks that plays really well right away.
All right, as far as teams that left me scratching my head, I mean, I got to go with Gangrene and the New York Jets, because when you look at that pick swap that they included in the Packers trade for with Aaron Rodgers, it seemed like the whole league telegraphed their desires for Broderick Jones, and there's Pittsburgh moving up with New England to snatch him away. And then they reached on Will McDonald. It just felt like the Jets kind of got played a little bit. And I don't know, Ross. I mean, how do you see their draft, and how do you think things are going to go for Aaron Rodgers there in 2023?
Well, listen, I like some of the guys. You know, they drafted like a Joe Tippmann on the O-line in round two. So I like some of the things they did. But I pretty much agree with everything that you just said. You know, I thought they had way, way, way too much leverage to be giving up as much as they did for Aaron Rodgers. I mean, you know, there's some reports out there that he might end up, you know, committing to 2 years. He better. I mean, for them to give up what they gave up, a one and a two for the right to pay a guy $60 million for 1 year, he better play more than 1 year, or they better win the Super Bowl, is how I would describe it. And then the pick swap ended up killing them. They needed an O-lineman. Everybody knew they needed an O-lineman. Everybody knew they liked Broderick Jones. And the Steelers knew that, too. And so this pick swap happens, and now they're behind their division rival, the Patriots, instead of in front of them. Patriots don't want the Jets to get what they want. So Patriots able to move down and still get Christian Gonzalez. Yeah. Are you kidding me? And so then the Jets get Will McDonald. I mean, a lot of people didn't have Will McDonald going in the first round, and they took him 15 overall. It's not even really a position of need for them. Not good. Not a good process for the Jets in a lot of different ways.
All right, Ross, I'll let you finish up in terms of just anything else draft-related, positively or negatively, teams that you thought did well that maybe we're not talking about as much, or teams whose drafts you didn't like that maybe aren't garnering enough criticism.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the Browns did well because they didn't have a pick till 70. You know, we never talk about that, but
it's true.
You know, they were able to get several good players even though they didn't have a first or second-round pick. That's pretty darn good. In my book, you know, the Lions are a really interesting one.
Sure.
Because people are crushing them because they took a running back at 12 and an off-the-ball linebacker at 18. I don't know, man. I don't know. It's funny because you can look at it two different ways with Brad Holmes as their GM, right? So you look at it like he's feeling himself a little bit and feeling confident. And he doesn't mind taking guys at positions that other people might criticize because the Lions are on the come up and he feels like he's built up the equity to be able to do something. Or is it the opposite? Is he taking safer players at running back and linebacker because he doesn't want to swing and miss? I don't really know the answer to that. I do know this, though. We always talk about all these picks, especially in the first round, as if they're all going to be good players. They're not. Like, half these guys, okay, half these guys probably won't even start double-digit games in their career, right? So if the Lions draft the two guys in the first round that end up being starters for years and play well, I don't care what position they're playing, I'm totally fine with that in Jahmyr Gibbs. And I really like the two guys they got early in round two that I think will probably start for them right away in LaPorta at tight end and Brian Branch. So to get four starters, that's pretty good.
There he is, Ross Tucker, at Ross Tucker NFL on all social platforms. The Ross Tucker podcast is great for all your football insights. Ross, always good to chat, recapping the draft, and happy Mother's Day to your mother and all the moms out there. Again, myfrontpagestory.com makes for a great Mother's Day gift. Ross, thank you.
Absolutely. Great talking with you, always.